one.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. The 51551 is our text number. Well, Molesworth Street is completely empty because it's shut down. The Garda Public Order unit were out, but they're gone back in again. There's pretty sturdy barriers. But around in Merrion Square, it looks from where I'm sitting, and I'm judging Twitter at this stage, photographs, it's a massive crowd. Whether it'll be the 100,000 that came out at least on two occasions remains to be seen, but it's well over, not that I'm a great judge, but it's well over 30,000. Derek Bourne, who's been on this programme before, an anti-water charges campaigner. Where are you, Derek?
I'm just at the stage here, Joe.
And have you any idea how... Just as you're at the corner of two sides of Merrion Square.
Yeah, well... There's a good few cows here. There's a great turnout here. The people of Ireland are yet again showing it to the Irish government and standing up again and saying that no way, we won't pay.
Okay, and there's a good atmosphere, obviously.
Everyone's in great spirits, you know. Everyone can sense that the Irish government is ready to fall, and it's a great achievement for the people that people power and people protesting has yet again paid off in this country. And when the people stand and stand united, they can achieve anything.
And what's the format for the afternoon, do you know, Derek? Because it started at 1 o'clock.
It starts at 1 o'clock now. The main right to work finishes at 4 now. Other groups and all are getting together and having a people's convention and an open mic session where the ordinary people of this country can get to have their say.
And what time are you due to stay till?
Well, you know, we'll see where the mood takes us, you know. At the end of the day, the people could sense the end of the government and stay on the streets and force change in this country with the people sit out protest on the streets. Because the time for Enda Kenny and Joan Borton to go is now. The people have spoken and they haven't listened to them.
Well, you heard what Enda Kenny said yesterday. He's not going now. Jerry Brown, Jerry, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Joe.
And how are you getting on today, Jerry?
Very well. There's a great crowd here. It's a great day for the people of Ireland. The speakers are saying there's between 60 and 80,000 people here.
Okay.
And there's a ring of steel around all there, and it's the first time I've ever seen it.
Because you're on the other side, you're around the Merrion Square today.
Yeah, it's very hard to hear, Joe.
Okay, I understand that you're around the Merrion Square.
I'm not surprised to have a ring of steel around it because I believe the people have this government on the run.
Okay.
Things are changing so fast, this government mightn't have time to even to get their hats and coats before they leave. The people are just fed up and they're all there.
But there's a good,
Jerry, protesting.
But Jerry, from what I'm seeing here, there's a good atmosphere at it. It's not.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. There's no signs of any disruptions from anybody.
Okay, lots of.
In fact, they're a bit concerned about crowd crushing at the moment because the numbers are so big.
Okay. Well, we'll check in with you later on, Jerry. You mind yourself. And Derek Bourne as well. Both of them down there in Merrion Square. Let me bring in Maria. Maria, good afternoon. Because of all the calls we got this morning were about Áras an Tráchta in Swinford in County Mayo. Maria, you trained as an intellectual disabilities nurse. How are you?
I'm fine, Joe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could you watch all of that programme last night, or did you have to, like so many people, avert your eyes?
Oh, definitely avert my eyes, Joe, definitely. I can only just say it was heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking to watch it.
Okay, now the angle you can bring to this conversation is not as a viewer of a television programme, but as a nurse who's worked with people with intellectual disabilities. Is it a tough job?
It is a tough job, but there's a lot of jobs that's tough. And really, I think the one thing that you do need is you need to have respect. And that's what I saw last night. There was no respect. I think it can be very tough, and it has become more difficult because more and more we are spending our time writing, filling up forms, and while HICWA have brought some good, positive things. Unfortunately, less time is spent with our residents and more time is spent writing and filling up forms, and you have less time with them.
Have you ever... The immunity that the workers are, and they sounded, the women involved, and there was one man, the women involved all sounded as if they're from Mayo, all sounded as if they were mm-hmm. from around Swinford. Mm-hmm. But they had they become desensitised to people's feelings? Does the job make you do that?
I'm 30 years in the job. I haven't become desensitised. There's no excuse whatsoever for the behaviour.
So what happened, Maria? What happened? Was it staffing? The PNA were out yesterday saying there's always an issue with staffing levels there. Was it staffing levels?
Well, you see, we could talk about a whole range of different issues, but there is nothing, there is no issue that excuses the behaviour in that. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that categorically. There is no issue that excuses that. But in my experience, and particularly working in HSE, a sort of a toxic culture was allowed to develop, and people that became over the years, I suppose the whole management system, whoever was next in line mm-hmm. became a leader, became a manager. And it doesn't mean necessarily that they are the right person for the job. My experience, I would have seen a lot of bullying behavior. And it's difficult to work in that. Because I have absolutely, and I want to make this clear as well, there are really good staff that work in Áras an Tráchta, and I feel for them today. I really do. But that type of behaviour last night that I saw was just inexcusable. I work in a setting where we have six adults. Mm-hmm. They have severe intellectual needs. There are two staff. We have two staff. Now, we have to attend to all their needs, and that includes the cooking, the washing, the laundry, the cleaning, the documentation, and their social, spiritual, psychological
needs.
But
last night in Swinford, we were told, in Bungalow 3, which is the one that was secretly filmed, in Bungalow 3, there was, all five staff for seven residents.
I was amazed at the staff. I looked at that and I thought, oh my God, if we had that staff. And yet it's HSE. I don't understand it. They had the staff. That's why I say there is no excuse. There is no excuse for the behaviour last night that I saw on that.
Now, it's wrong to even try and benchmark one episode against another last night mm-hmm. because they were mm-hmm. so distressing. But what was the episode, what was the incident last night that you would remember for a long time?
Well, when I see somebody turning up a chair... Mm-hmm. When I see someone kicking someone, when I see someone trying to feed someone or give them a drink when obviously they're able to take it themselves. I could name loads, Joe, but it was heartbreaking to watch it. But as I say, the toxic culture that was obviously allowed to develop there needs to be addressed, and it's top down. Mm. It really does.
In a setting like that, where there are, and it's a similar setting, there's quite a number of these, quite a number of these residence blocks now around the country, the bungalow setting or whatever. Is it not fair to say that if a manager did come along, you would see them coming and you wouldn't be pushing food or force feeding?
Oftentimes, the managers aren't on the floor. You know, first of all, really. I mean, we shouldn't have to be just waiting for a manager to be beside
us. I know that.
But I have to say, you wouldn't often see manage. They're not necessarily on the floor, you know? And that has been over the years, and I will stress, it is improving. As I say, I'm in the job a long time. And as I said in my email, it sometimes it's just like rolling a boulder up the hill. It is difficult. It's very difficult. But I do see some changes. But yes, managers, they're not often there. They aren't often there. Sometimes they'll be on nights. Sometimes they'll be on their days off. They could be, you know, whatever. They may not be there. You don't have, you know, a Monday to Friday manager there. That's just my experience. I don't know about other places, but that's often the case.
Can families call unannounced?
Oh, totally, absolutely. Yeah. In where I work, absolutely.
Can other people call unannounced?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Well, strangers can't call unannounced, can they?
How do you mean?
If I was driving by Oris Attracted today in Swinford, I couldn't pull in and knock on the door.
Well, you see, you have to remember, this is their home.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So it is their home. So, like, you treat it like anybody's home. You're not just going to let a stranger mm-hmm. walk into your home. So families and whatever, yeah, there's no such thing as visiting times and all
okay.
that.
Okay, well,
like,
that's interesting
That's all gone. I mean, you see, the thing in Oris Attracted, it's a congregated setting. So there's probably a huge amount of staff, a lot of talking. What amazed me was an awful lot of tea. You know...
Well, you haven't either. I know you haven't a problem with that. But I would have thought that given the intensity of the work... And I did some mm-hmm. of it in a previous life. Given the intensity of the work, but given the number of staff that were there, it yeah. meant that if there's five staff or seven residents, now I don't, mm-hmm. it would normally mean that between the five of us, we would agree that every 2 hours somebody gets 15 minutes of a break or a fresh air or a cup of tea mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. go out mm-hmm. and have a smoke if they mm-hmm. smoke or use mm-hmm. the mobile if they, that mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. That you can dilute the intensity of it.
There is no, as I just say, I work in a house with six adults and they have been total needs. But we have to do, with the two, with myself, my other colleague, we would have to do the cooking, the laundry, the cleaning, and also bring them out in social outings, do mm-hmm. them. We do that. There is nothing I could look at that last night. It was appalling. But where was the leadership?
Would staff object to CCTV?
I don't know. I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, Joe, I'm always of the opinion that, you know, I do it as my work as if someone was watching. Do you know? Yeah. You have to. But then again, you have to remember, this is people's homes as well.
Yeah, I know.
We can't forget that, you know, we're talking about where I am. It's a small bungalow. There's six people. It's their home as well. So, but, you know, really and truly...
It would be some deterrent, but I don't know if it would deter people from working in bungalows or in places like Oris Attracted. Stay there for a sec, Maria.
Yeah,
Mary Jo Clark is in Clare. Mary Jo, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe? How's it going?
Good. You saw last night, you couldn't sleep afterwards. You've worked in general nursing and special needs. And you say you were ostracised for whistleblowing.
Yes.
What happened?
I was in general, left general, went to do special needs. And it was like bedlam. Mm-hmm. There was no training as such on the job, although we had the theory behind us. And it was a very, very special need ward. I saw a young man, a carer, uh-huh. Leaving a young man who was paraplegic, lying on the floor of a freezing cold bathroom on tiles as he got him out of the bath.
Okay.
The poor devil couldn't speak or do anything about it, but honestly, he was howling. And I mentioned it to someone innocently, thinking this was, you know, the wrong thing to be doing to anyone. And I got reported to the senior nursing sister, who was a male.
Uh-huh.
And I was told that if I didn't get on with my job and be quiet, that I wouldn't have a career. I had to spend 3 years, Joe. There were many times when I was going to pack it in, but I got so fond of the people I was working with. We would have a 3 month block on different in different places, work area, people who were more able-bodied or less able-bodied or whatever. And every 3 months, when I moved to the different units, my name had been passed on before I got there as a troublemaker.
Okay.
And I don't know how I completed the 3 years, but as I say, I was determined to do it because I loved the job.
It's the only way you can do the job is if you love the job.
Mm. Yeah.
And I like yourself, what about 10 years ago, I reported an individual because I saw physical abuse.
Yeah.
And what happened?
I'll tell you what happened. What happened is about 4 months later, that individual got promoted.
Yeah.
And I know that is repeated throughout number of situations. But you just keep battling. As I say, every day you go into work and there's special moments, there's little things that happen. Mm-hmm. I work with some really good colleagues and that's what keeps you going. That's what actually keeps you going. It's the resident, you're there for them. You just block out, but there is so much. It's the toxic culture that has developed over years. And it's
exactly.
Hard battle.
And last night, I would say my opinion about last night was the management. And you said it yourself. The ethos of the person in charge is carried right down through to the very...
Yeah, but you can't... I take that point, but you can't be everywhere. And I don't know who's in charge or who isn't in charge. I don't know how long they've been in the job or whatever. But the fact of the matter is that people know the difference between wrong and right. And I want to know is that the people who were seen perform those acts, the man who ran in and sat on...
I think he was the manager.
Well, no. We don't know who that person was. Please do not say that now. That's very unfair. We don't know who the person is. But what I do suspect is that the people who were in the programme last night, even though their faces were blocked out, their voices weren't changed, would be easily identifiable to people in the Swinford area, one. Mm-hmm. And two, they, in turn, would have relatives, friends, husbands, children, aunties, uncles, that they must feel completely... ashamed today.
Yeah.
And I'd love to hear from anyone in that setting. Let me bring in...
You're right in what you're saying, Joe. We're all individuals and we're responsible and accountable for what we do or don't do. But there is a thing in a small setting where you have... it's cosy, it's cups of tea, all the... We saw all that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have... good management ethos, and I had managed a place myself. You bring people in, you come along, every single person in that place is an individual and has to be treated as such. Their likes, their dislikes, that has to be put in to the person you're training. What music do they like? What food do they like? They're getting the personal involvement from the person you're training. And if that doesn't happen, people become indifferent and lack of respect. We saw it. Mm-hmm. And their individual needs are not met.
And it's self-management as well we're talking about. Let me bring in Dr. John Paul Campion, 51551. John Paul, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You were listening to the programme. We know people were shocked, horrified, couldn't sleep, and that doesn't, by saying it that quickly, I don't mean to underestimate the effect it had on people. You have a particular angle, one, medical, obviously, through your profession, John, but two, because of your role as a parent.
Yeah, Joe, I mean, I'm the father of a child with special needs. I have a 2-year-old daughter with Down syndrome. And, I mean, from my point of view, I feel... you know, that parents of children with special needs have enough worries without worrying about what's going to happen in 30, 40, 50 years' time should their child ever need to be put into residential care. You know, it's very hard. 50 years ago, we would have heard of stories like this happening in our residential institutions, but it's hard to believe that 50 years on that this can still happen. And for parents of small children now who we don't know what way they'll develop over the years and whether I'll still be around or my wife, it's very difficult kind of to know what the future will hold and what lessons can be learned from this.
Mm-hmm. I suggested CCTV. Would staff object to CCTV? Obviously HICWA are now saying, and Tony O'Brien to HSE are saying, and by the way, HICWA say they've been doing it all along anyway, though that they gave ours a list of improvements which they say they implemented. So they got a clean bill of health before all of this. The Tony O'Brien of the HSE is now saying they will send in mystery undercover cameras or whatever, undercover interns. But is there another way out? Is it just is it to say in public areas, though, again, people say they could do things in private areas to residents, that there should be much more CCTV? Would that be a help?
Joe, I don't think you can ever know exactly what happens behind closed doors. I mean, you have to remember that Áras an Tráchta Bungalow 3 is the home of these people. Mm-hmm. And putting cameras into somebody's home, even if it's for their own benefit, is a violation of their privacy as human beings. I mean, one of the measures of civilization is how we treat our most vulnerable citizens. And what happened last night is we saw some of our most vulnerable citizens being treated like animals. And
I know all this, and I don't want to fall back on cliches. I know one of the measures of civilization is how we treat prisoners, all that carry on. But the fact of the matter is that you cannot use the word we, because part of the we last night was the Irish citizens from Mayo who would look like were engaged in that activity of being so dehumanised or whatever self-management morality they had lost or whatever, that they treated people so awfully. Or maybe they would turn around and say, we are under so much pressure, stress, don't get paid enough, our rosters are too long, our shifts are too long, the stuff you don't see. Maybe they will try, there's no excuse, but maybe they'll try and offer an attempt at understanding. But these are our citizens who did this.
Yes, but Joe, you can't train someone to be a decent human being. I mean, you have to have a vocation to care for people with intellectual disability. You have to want to do it. You have to like caring for people with intellectual disability. You have to feel like the work is worth doing. I mean, nobody can tell me that anyone that was on video last night seemed to be either enjoying their job as a carer, although that word is probably not appropriate to what was happening in video last night. And definitely, they didn't seem to want to interact with their clients in any personal or, you know, developmental way. I mean, it's all well and good having a care plan and HICWA come in and tick the box. Yes, they have a care plan in place. It's a completely different thing entirely to implement that care plan in a decent human manner. And, I mean, some people are cut out to be carers and some people are not cut out to be carers. And it's very hard, I admit that, it's very hard for HICWA or any other government body to come in and see somebody and say whether they are fit to care for people with intellectual disabilities.
Let me bring in Michael O'Connor. Sorry, you want to come back there. Maria, is it?
Yeah, I just think, yeah. Look, the bottom line is you have to be the right person for the right job. What I saw last night, should not be in that job. I mean, as you were saying, you can become desensitized. I know 30 years on, I haven't been, and I've seen it all. I've seen it all. I've dealt with all the different bodies over the years. I've dealt with all. I haven't been. You have to be the right person, and you need training for people. You need to give resources to the staff in order to get the basic training.
Yeah, but apparently there was training. Apparently there was.
Yeah, some of them had VTech, but they're obviously not the right people for the job. I mean, as I say, no talking about pay or talking about staffing could excuse what was there last night.
Okay, Michael O'Connell's in Cork, 51551. By the way, the numbers are well exceeded 30,000 from what I'm gathering, and this is through Twitter, is my only contact with Merrion Square at the minute, but the numbers are well exceeding 30,000. There, Gerry Adams has spoken, Claire Daly has spoken, and there's a group gathering around at the Kildare Street. So, but Molesworth Street, as you might have gathered, is completely locked down. You cannot get from one end of Molesworth Street to the other, and there are pretty substantial barriers and pretty substantial numbers of Gardaí as well, which in turn, it seems, is attracting a crowd who are taunting the Gardaí, but no doubt it will continue to be the main focus will be around in Merrion Square. Michael O'Connell is in Cork. Michael, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
And thanks for making the call. You worked in a centre for people with disabilities.
Yes, I did. I worked in Dublin. I don't want to identify the centre now in deference to the residents there.
No bother,
but I started in 1980, and the first thing we had, well, first of all, I had a rigorous interview. My references were checked and verified before I was given the job, and then we had classroom training. Mm-hmm. But what really, it was on the ground training, because when we went in, your previous caller spoke there about the ethos and about coming down from the top down. And in every unit that I worked in that centre, there was a person in charge. And that person was there constantly. They were there from, our shifts used to be from, there were long shifts, 8 in the morning to 8 at night. And you had a person there all the time, a person in charge. Now, I worked in various units, but what's really impressed upon us from the very beginning was whilst all the residents there, they've ranged with profound physical and intellectual disabilities right up to mild. And what was impressed upon us from the very beginning was that, yes, they have disabilities, yes, they have needs, yes, they have wants, but the first thing was that they were human beings, and the human being was to be taken first. That was your bottom line. They were human beings, then you looked after their needs and their wants. And that's what was seen to be absent last night from what I saw.
And who, Michael, I don't want to know names, obviously, but who was in charge of your centre? The HSE were in charge of ours on ours at
Well, it was a voluntary organisation.
Okay. And did you feel...
You had a board of management, then you had a matron, you had assistant matrons, and then you had supervisors.
But did you feel confident enough if something, because one of the things that obviously arose in Norris Attractor was other people were watching this and doing nothing. So they were either fearful or complicit or disinterested or had other things on their mind or didn't see it the way we saw it on the camera. Was there an atmosphere in your centre that you could report another worker, this is what happens, another worker if you saw them misbehave or be unkind?
In one unit that I worked in, one of the last units I worked before I left, and I said I worked there in this centre for nearly 12 years. In the last unit I worked, there were residents, there were 24 residents with profound physical and intellectual disabilities. So we had to do everything for them. They were, they depended on us for everything, from washing to feeding and so on and so forth. And we had a team of usually around 5-6 staff, including the person in charge. And each morning, when we come on duty, we were given a report, how the residents, how they were the night before, the day before, if there's anything coming up, if there's any particular, because they would have had other conditions, they would have had epilepsy, they would have had various other conditions as well. So therefore, you were given a report, and you had a certain group, maybe 4 or 5, that you were in charge, that you were sole carer of for that day, or for a week maybe. So therefore, you were told the various things that were going on with them. Now, in that team, you had the team, and each member of the team, we supported each other with the guidance of the person in charge. We had meetings, very regular meetings, about their ongoing care. But if it was in a situation that one member of the team wasn't pulling their weight or was doing something that was inappropriate, yes, we would have gone to the person in charge and said, look, this is not happening or whatever. Or you might speak to the person themselves. You might say, listen, this is not on. You can't be doing this, or so on. Why are you doing it? Or so on and so forth. So that culture was there. This is the time in 1980, Joanne, I heard you refer earlier to staffing levels and so on. When I worked there, there was, as you may remember, there was massive cutbacks in the health service in the mid-80s. And staffing levels did drop, but it was still the care that was given to the residents didn't drop. Now, we worked our bloody butts off, but it didn't drop. So the actual staffing levels is not an excuse. There is no excuse for what went on there last night. I cannot understand how these people were employed. As I said, we were vetted. We were our references were checked and so on and so forth. And he had ongoing supervision.
Well, could
and if we fell down on the job, you were falling down on the job.
Okay, and you felt confident in whistleblowing. Let me bring Andre in, 51551. Andre, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
How are you?
Not too bad.
You were a staff nurse,
yes,
in a centre for people with intellectual disabilities. What did you witness?
Well, from the early stage of working in it, I witnessed, like your callers there, some bad practice. I tried to address it and I basically didn't get anywhere when I did.
And when you say bad practice, what do you mean?
I would have witnessed people being shouted at. I would have witnessed people being called by their surname, told to go to certain areas of the house out of the staff's way. If somebody came into, say, a kitchen area, they were told to go out straight away. They weren't asked if they wanted anything, especially some people who would have had, I suppose the best way to describe it would be that communication levels wouldn't have been, needless to say, understood by staff, because some of these people would have had high levels of autism, which would never have been diagnosed. And it was only in later years, maybe, it would have been diagnosed. And as a result, some staff were, let's say, very, very impatient with those people.
And we saw a lot of that last night, even to begin with the point, the first charge you made, Andre, about people being called by their surnames. And that was, there was many distressing things, but one thing that was actually more distressing than people would realise when we just describe it here, was somebody, it was McGinty,
yeah.
Come on, do this, McGinty. And it was so pejorative, there was almost venom in the use of the word McGinty, but this was this woman's surname.
Yes.
And that
yes.
was that was very hurtful to watch, I'm sure. And it was evident, I presume, of disenchantment, to say the least. So you reported this, Andrea, and was it run by the HSE, can I ask?
Yes, it was,
okay.
Yes.
And what happened when you reported it?
Well, the first time I went to go, I asked advice from a couple of colleagues who had been there a long time. And I asked, you know, when I saw the bad practice, I was the first staff there, like, let's say, the new staff on the block for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did ask, I was told that, you know, that I had to think very carefully if I was to bring this to management. And when I inquired what that meant, I was told, well, you know, it would reflect very badly on both my job and basically where I was living. So I saw that myself even as a threat. And I have to be honest, Joe, I felt like very intimidated and actually scared myself. And if I felt that as somebody who had worked in various areas all my life, what must the people have been feeling who were there and who were so vulnerable? I addressed it with management. I put it in letter form.
Okay.
And as I said, nothing was done. Now, practice improved, say, over the past couple of years. Needless to say, with HICWA coming on board, there was definitely an adherence to better practice. But when you are trying to voice for somebody who cannot voice for themselves, and there is a staff element of a group of staff, it is very, very difficult to be the one person that's trying to, and so much.
Okay,
so
other, but Andrea, sorry for kind of crash, but is there other power avenues you could have gone, like the whistleblower in Aris Attractor obviously went to the prime time investigative, the RT investigative unit, knowing that they rightly so have the massive resources to do this type of long term undercover project. But could you go, for example, to your union?
Well, again, like that, I would have passed on various forms of bad practice to my union, and I would have been very, very concerned about what I would have seen. And at one stage, when matters weren't being addressed, I was actually the person that was moved. And then I suppose one comment that I'd heard, which was verified, that why was I being sent to work with a certain group of people since I wouldn't be shouting at them? And when I heard that comment, that summed up for me why these people were in this job. Like, what was it about? It certainly wasn't about caring for the vulnerable people. But I suppose, Joe, one point that this has actually been investigated at the moment, because I have brought it even further to the attention of management, when the direct line managers weren't actually dealing with the matter. I went further, and that is where it is at the moment. But needless to say, like so many people in this line of work, I couldn't let today go without trying to make a call to somebody like yourself. But
have you been vindicated?
Well, let's say I feel that I can hold my head up, I can hold my hands up and say that I did what was right, that I did challenge people. And I, like, let's say I wouldn't be in my job to be popular. I was in my job to work for the people that I was working for. And as I said there to the researcher, I was working for the residents. I was employed by them. The HSE was my official employer, but those residents were our employers, and they were treated with such disrespect. It was just absolutely enormous what I witnessed. And like, I suppose the most horrific part of last night's programme for me was, I'm over 30 years Joe's staff nurse. People have said to me, do you not want to go on to do management? I've never wanted to go on to do management. And I am really, really glad that I never did, because when I saw a clinical nurse manager sit on a resident.
And as that was, we don't know who the individual was last night who sat on the resident, Andrea, but we know how distressing for us even to see it on a grainy CCTV, and for you to see it.
Yes, well,
I
mean, it was
difficult.
The manager, I think what Barry Kelly's report says, the manager of the unit came in and sat on the resident. Now, because, needless to say, it's run as a HSE facility, usually the managers are clinical nurse managers, the terminology.
My reason for checking myself earlier on about the use of the word manager is that there could be six or seven managers, and
yes,
we don't know which one it was, and we can't tar.
Oh yes,
off.
I know.
That's my worry, but that's as nothing compared to, it seems, what you've gone through, Andrea. How far have you got down the road? You've written to the HSE, you've written to management.
Are
you still working there?
Oh no, I had to leave. I had no choice. I felt that my health suffered, and basically just everything just went downhill for me, and I was left with no choice. I thought I would maybe try and start afresh, and that's what I'm trying to do at the moment.
Okay.
But because when your health is affected to such a level that you have to take care of that also, needless to say. But I still have, only in the past, I'd say 6 to 8 weeks, I have received 2 letters from the area manager, because I'm still dealing with this 6 months after leaving the post. I'm still dealing with it, because I wouldn't have it on my conscience not to.
Okay. Andrea, well, from what you're saying, you're going to keep campaigning, and ironically, the prime time programme last night will only add strength, I think, to your case.
Yeah.
That's Andrea. I'll come back to more people after the break. Again, trying to follow in the gaps of what's happening in Merrion Square. Crowd getting bigger and bigger. Reports coming in that O'Connell Bridge is blocked, that there are three rows of Gardaí on both Molesworth Street and Kildare Street. So the Dáil is pretty sanitised in that sense. Now, whether that will aggravate some people or not, I do not know, but it seems that there are crowds gathering there, as well as the massive crowd that's around in Merrion Square, and we'll bring you more after this break. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And joe@rt.ie. It seems quite a few streets down Dublin city centre are closed because of the size of that demonstration. Is Mary Ryan there? Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You're down at the demonstration.
I'm down at the demonstration.
Were you at the previous marches?
I was.
And how does this one compare in terms
now,
of...
I would, I would say that there was a huge lunchtime crowd here.
Okay.
I asked one of the organisers how many did he think turned up, and he said it could be anything from 40 to 70,000.
Okay.
They're in two different spaces. The Dáil has been closed off, I'm sure you heard, and the government buildings have been closed off, so we cannot actually access the space outside the Dáil or the government buildings. So, and then the groups are in two places. So there's a group in at Fitzwilliam Square end and then at the Merrion Square end.
Okay.
And the van is in between, and there are people making speeches from the van.
And we're now told that the Lewis Red Line at the junction of O'Connell Street has been blocked by protesters. I'm looking at a photograph tweeted by somebody in Molesworth Street in an office in Molesworth Street 5 minutes ago. And there's quite a large crowd now. There are significant barriers up, but there's quite a large crowd gathering where the old passport office used to be. Sorry, where the passport office still is, where old government publications used to be. But there is one, two, three lines of Gardaí, two uniformed, and the third line is obviously the more seriously attired that they don't have. I hasten to add, they don't have any form of riot gear on. They're more like in overalls. What's the atmosphere down there, Mary?
Absolutely wonderful, Joe. It's a really happy, buoyant atmosphere,
okay,
full of hope. And Claire Daly made a fantastic speech where she described the people of Ireland as having got off our knees. And she's asked us to stay standing and take this on fully. They're talking about a People's Assembly in January, where the people of Ireland will take back control from the politicians who have betrayed us.
Mm-hmm. And Claire Daly said, today is a historic moment. Irish water is dead. We've just come to bury it.
That's exactly it. She
and
said
what,
that, yeah.
What did Gerry Adams say? Can you recall?
Gerry Adams actually, well, he just said that, you know, we're...
Oh, he said, this is not a republic. In the true sense of the word, that's what he
yes.
said.
And there are a lot of people, you know, speaking like that. That the political class has betrayed us, and it's time for us to let them hear what we're saying, good and loud this time. I don't think they're for turning, but it will be at their peril if they don't, because there were people here. It wasn't just the usual suspects, Joe. I know that they're interested in looking at the calibre of the crowd, if you like, and I would be a usual suspect because I've been out on every protest since the banks were bailed out day one. Mm. I sort of foresaw some of what's happened. I didn't think it would actually happen as badly as it has, but there was a couple from Waterford who, when they couldn't get outside the Dáil, the woman was nearly in tears saying that they had come all the way from Waterford, they were old age pensioners, and she was trying to make her way up through Fitzwilliam Square. I presume she got there in the end. So there are lots of people with homemade posters. Mm. So it's not just the usual people, the anti-water charges.
And
Brendan Logan is actually...
And there's a lot of quite witty posters as well.
Yes,
I mean,
there are.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And there's something like, there was one man with a helmet and a tap stuck to the top of the helmet.
Saw him, yeah.
You know, and the usual slogans.
And
like,
a lot of tricolours.
A lot of tricolours. I saw Airigi on the way down past O'Connell Street when I was arriving. So they've made their way as well. Now, a lot of the people are drifting away now, but I would imagine what will happen is people will come and go all day because it's going to be on until 7 o'clock,
okay,
just to give an opportunity to the people who couldn't come during the day to go down and let the politicians inside, who are obviously sitting inside petrified. They must be petrified when they've blocked off our parliaments, the parliaments of both sides, the government buildings and the Dáil, from the people of Ireland. And I wouldn't mind, but people are really, there's a very innocent feeling about the place. There's no menace whatsoever. Brendan Ogle has been emceeing, and he has called on a number of occasions for people just to be step back one step if you feel that you're being crushed, and to do it gently, not to knock over anybody. As he said, he doesn't want any incidents. So it's a very good-humoured protest, at the same time warning the government that we need action. We need Irish water to be buried. Claire Daly was talking about Dennis O'Brien and the idea that he owns the company that is putting in the meters at the moment. It's a tiny bit sickening.
Yeah, but they won the contract, didn't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't matter, Joe. It's all about big corporations and how much money they can get out of our pockets to put into the pockets of people who don't even pay income tax here, who get out of Ireland when their time is up so that they will not have to pay income tax. In the meantime, I'm doing an essay at the moment over in UCD on child well-being, and this morning I was reading that the child poverty in Ireland is 28.6%. The UNICEF report from about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we have gone from being the middle of the OECD countries to fourth from the bottom, Joe, in terms of child poverty. We're fourth from the bottom. Can you imagine that? So our children at the moment, some of them are being made homeless, some of them have to get breakfast when they go to school, and there's 25% of our population made up of children, and we are abusing the children. The Auris Attracta, yes, that was dreadful. My stomach was sick last night as I was looking at it. But it is the same kind of calibre that is of politics, I will say, that is allowing our children to go hungry, to go without educational opportunities, to go without jobs. There's a new word now that they have invented, NEET. What is it?
But you can hardly
employment or education.
But you can hardly blame what happened in Auris Attracta on Dennis O'Brien. We've already had a staff member, another employee of another centre, saying the staffing levels in Auris Attracta were more than adequate. Five staff for seven residents.
Yeah,
paid for by the taxpayer.
Yeah, I suppose I've heard the minister say that it's time for undercover surveillance, and I am completely against anything undercover. Let's have open surveillance. That's what we need. We need people to know that if they're looking after our sick, our vulnerable, and our old in homes like that, that they are surveyed on a constant basis.
Okay.
We do not want undercover surveillance. I hate to be part of a country. That's, we accuse the Russians of doing that kind of thing under the communist regime.
Okay. Mary, at this stage, what's the running order for later on this afternoon, do you know?
There's an event on at 4 o'clock, and I'm not quite sure. There was the
Damien Dempsey's going to sing. I'm told, yeah. Sinead O'Connor is going to sing. I read somewhere this morning Russell Brand is showing up.
That would be very exciting, actually. Although I didn't like his I saw his YouTube whatever it's called on the water. I didn't quite like it. I'm with him in spirit and in politics.
It was, be honest, Mary, it was laughable, but not in the comedic sense.
Yeah, I didn't really like it, to tell you the truth. I'm with you there, Joe. I thought it was a bit demeaning of the Irish. I didn't like him copying her accent. It was a tiny bit insulting, as I said, politically.
Okay, but in the overall global look at what's happening in terms of people demonstrating, it doesn't matter a twit, really, because the size of the demonstration today says enough, I suppose.
Doesn't it, really? Okay. And I'd say they're going to come and go all day now. There are people drifting away now because I'd say they're going back to work, and they're being replaced by other people.
Okay, Mary.
So it's a historic day.
Okay, and thanks for contacting us down from Marion Square. Mary, I'm told, is standing behind a truck. That's why it sounds so clear. Thanks, Mary. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And I can say again, looking at photographs, it's all ages and all parts of the country, from young children to much older people down at the demonstration. If I hear about a Collins Street, I will tell you. But remember, given the traffic configuration of Dublin, which is crazy, 8 people on O'Connell Street can shut down the whole city, at O'Connell Bridge can shut down the whole city. Let me bring Alice in. Alice, good afternoon. Auris Attracta, you say watching the programme tonight or last night brought back memories to you, quite vivid, because it's quite recently. You were a whistleblower.
Well, at the time, good afternoon, Joe.
Good afternoon, Alice.
Joe, at the time, I didn't know what whistleblower meant. I thought it was quite normal what I'd done, to report the breaches of trust, that was normal. Unfortunately for me, it wasn't. I was dismissed very, very quickly.
And what did you see?
The same as last night. The only other thing was it would have been a very serious breach of medication and bullying and just something like last night. Now, I actually feel quite ill today.
And who did you report it to, Alice, the allegations?
Well, I reported it to my manager.
Mm-hmm.
which my manager, then I was called to a meeting the next day and dismissed, and I was asked not to go to the health board. Would I allow them have an internal investigation, which I did. And after about 4 weeks, I was dismissed the next morning. After about 4 weeks, Joe, I was called to a meeting in a local hotel where I lived, and I was treated like a leper. And the only thing that they did say to me was that they knew there was breaches of trust there, but they didn't know how bad it was. But last night, Joe, I couldn't. I feel vindicated today, Joe. I actually feel I'm so happy I done it. I'm only sorry that I didn't go to the health board at the time.
And who was running the centre that you were?
The centre that I, that it was like a board of management, but it was funded by the health board. Yeah. It was a local, like, say some of these, you know, these homes that are run by board.
And Alice, when you say you were dismissed, do you mean your complaint was dismissed or you were dismissed from your job?
I was dismissed the next morning.
But surely there are rights, workers' rights, trade unions.
Well, Joe, I wasn't in a union. Unfortunately, Joe, my late husband was a service user, but he didn't go, it wasn't a residential service user. And he had died a few years before. So my youngest was 9. So after 5 years, I decided, because I have been a carer all my life and worked with voluntary organisations all my life. So I thought now that my child was 15, I wanted to go back into the services because it's what I know and loved best. And I was very happy to get back into the services, Joe. And within 5 weeks, Joe, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, I couldn't actually believe what I seen last night. It was just so vivid of what happened in my experience. But, Joe, I was treated like a leper. I probably wasn't strong enough at the time to... When they told me about the outcome of it and I was dismissed, I probably wasn't strong enough, Joe, at the time to follow it up.
I can understand if people become isolated because I think you're the fourth whistleblower we've had on the programme today. And remember, this day, 3 years ago, 2011, Louise Bayliss, who happened to be on a demonstration against cuts for lone parents outside the Dáil, and Louise was on talking about that, and I don't know how the conversation, I asked her what she worked at, and she said one of the things she did was she was an advocate for patients in St. Brendan's and Grange Gorman, and I happened to say, how are things up there? And she said, well, there's a group of women she worked with who were in an open ward who were about to be put into a locked ward for Christmas because of cutbacks. And there was enormous resistance from a lot of organisations to Louise telling her story, and even though she wasn't directly employed by the HSE because she was an outside advocate, so to speak, she lost her job in January, and but she was subsequently reinstated. Alice, stay there for a sec. Aisling, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
You characterise yourself as another whistleblower.
Well, that could be the title, yeah. Even the name, I mean, is it not something that we should just be doing anyway? Our duty of care is to care for people.
You worked for 10 years.
Yeah, I work. I actually currently still work in ID.
Intellectual disability sector.
Yeah, intellectual disabilities, yeah, with people with intellectual disabilities. And I worked in a challenge and behaviour unit for almost 9 years.
Okay.
So it was, I mean, you know, there's absolutely no excuse for what was put on the TV last night and for the behaviour of the staff. I think, though, it has to be looked at in the culture of staff when there's so many staff working together for so many years.
Okay.
It becomes like, and I can speak from my own experience, that you become friends with these people, you're working 13-hour days, and then your loyalties begin to change. You know, that was my experience. I started to witness things, and I thought, this isn't sitting with me, like, you know, I'm not comfortable with this.
Okay.
And then the more education I was given around, you know, kind of the rights of individuals and as the people that we're working with, I started to realise I was becoming part of that culture. And there was an incident where a friend, I'd been friends with this person for years, I witnessed this person doing something to a service user, and I reported it. And it was difficult to do, but it was the right thing to do, and I would do it again. And I was moved then, eventually, from the area I was working in after the person came back.
And what was the outturn?
just I didn't feel, I certainly didn't feel supported by the service. I didn't feel supported by my team. The service user was fine, thank God, like he was okay. His family were informed, but there was nothing further on that. The person that I made the allegation against returned to the unit in which we were both working, and I was moved. I was moved to a different area. Like, mm-hmm. It was so difficult to do it and to even do it, but I knew, I said to myself, if I witness this and do not report this, then I am in the wrong place to be working. But I didn't feel supported and still don't, you know.
Come in there.
Yeah.
Yes, Alice, yes. Alice,
Joe, I just wanted to say, listen to that lady there, that's exactly how it was for me as well. The same people after 5 years are still working there.
Mm.
And I, as a caring person and as a human being, I just could not let this happen to the service users. Mm. I had to speak up. They have no voice. And Joe, as a whistleblower, we don't have a voice.
This is the thing I'd just like to say as well. It's lovely listening to that lady. I'd like to know, I was listening to the programme, watching the programme last night with my partner who also works in this area.
Mm-hmm.
But I was interesting when I heard one of the girls on the show saying there was a staff member here, a new staff member, and she was reporting everything, but she's moved now. Where has she moved to?
Yeah.
Is what I'd like to know. And part of me feels is, where has all the people been moved to who has made these, who has whistleblown or whatever, or brought these cases out? Where have the staff gone? Who's speaking for them? Where is our voice?
We don't have a voice.
You don't. And you think you can go to your manager, or you can go, I went to the director. I went above the nursing director.
Okay.
I went to the director to speak to her about this.
And what happened?
I was dismissed. It was all, I was told, it's in your contract. Absolutely, yeah. and I agree.
What's in your, sorry, what's in your contract?
My contract states that I can be moved.
I was dismissed.
Yeah.
Just dismissed and never, I was just
And
dismissed.
Were you on a probationary period, Alice, maybe?
Was
that the umbrella they used to hide the cover?
No, they didn't say that.
Okay.
They said that it wouldn't be in my interest to continue there. That's what I was told the next morning. It wouldn't be in my interest.
And Aisling and Alice, and I'm sorry you don't have the other whistleblowers here and ask them the same question. Like the politicians, I don't know whether you heard, rightly so, in the Dáil this morning. Now, they're running out of words. They're so exasperated having seen this programme. They're running out of words. They're talking about being ashamed and callous, and casual callousness, and it'll never happen again. And what can they do? Well, they're going to do something about it. Aisling, what can be done?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, integration into the community is probably the best way, I feel, to go. But I just want to say, to stay first of all, and a point that was said, and it's true, you cannot pay someone to care. Mm. People have to want to care. You have to want to do this job. In my experience, you have to have certain values and beliefs, and to be in this environment, you have to want to do it. I think that it needs to be looked at, residential services. I think integration into the community is the way to go, but then it comes down to resources, it comes down to money. But what are they prioritising? Are they prioritising people's,
Was it an issue in Áras an Éireachtaí with 5 staff for 7 residents?
I couldn't.
In a bungalow.
I actually couldn't believe it. When I seen the amount of staff with the amount of service users that were there, I thought, there's no excuse. No excuse. And it's not to say that there's an excuse for that behaviour, because there's one thing, kind of losing your temper or getting a bit annoyed and working long hours and being under stress and all that kind of thing. You have to be self-aware. But having that amount of staff there, there's no excuse for them to be sitting on a chair for 11 hours, for them poor ladies that were treated the way they were treated.
Okay, Aisling and Alice, stay with us till I take this break, because more people want to join in after this break. Brendan Ogle is now saying there are 100,000 people in Merrion Square, and there seems to be a demonstration down at O'Connor Street as well, and a demonstration in Molesworth Street / Kildare Street, which is completely blocked by barricades, not by people, but by barricade. But Merrion Square is definitely has an awful lot of people, if you can judge by the photographs that are being sent in. But Brendan Ogle is saying 100,000. Back after this. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Oh, there seems to be a lot of whistleblowers, which is good news, but what happened to them is not good news. You've heard Alice, you've heard Aisling, you've heard the people earlier in the programme who were all working in these centres and say they did complain. Susan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Hi.
You were a house parent. In a bungalow three, yes, type situation. Now, it was a
actually,
while ago.
It was bungalow three, but in a similar facility. But my experience could not have been more opposite to what I witnessed last night. I had 9 and sometimes 10 residents, okay, in my bungalow, and I could not have loved them more if they were my own family. I was totally devoted to them. I would have to be told to go off duty. I could be finished duty at 3 o'clock, and at 4 o'clock somebody would tell me to leave the building, mm-hmm, because I would say I just started something with an activity with someone and I just want to see how he gets on. I was oblivious to the clock. They were my friends. We had a beautiful relationship. I brought them on holidays. I'd sneak out to a dance at night and I'd be sneaking in, and they'd hear me and they'd get up and I'd make 9 or 10 mugs of cocoa and we'd sit around and we'd drink hot chocolate.
Have a laugh, yeah.
At 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I was proud of them. I was really proud of them. And what struck me last night is those women have deprived themselves of beautiful friendships.
You mean the workers? The workers. Yes.
Those women would become tremendous friends, loyal, beautiful, and a privilege to have in their lives, as my men were with me. Now, I occasionally ring back, and I've never had the courage to actually ask how they are because I couldn't bear to be told, as clearly some of them have passed on now.
Mm-hmm.
So I just get a mass said every year for them. For
and
the
Susan, for you to look at that, to see that programme last night.
I found it really harrowing, but I felt I owed it to those women to look at that. I didn't intend to look at it because, mm-hmm, I knew how it would affect me, and it has affected me deeply. But I felt I owed it to those women to at least look at their experience, which I did. I feel helpless. I feel if I lived close by, I'd love to go in and drop in something to them. But essentially, those women have done themselves a great disservice.
And how do you frame what happened, Susan, that they became so dehumanised, it seemed?
Well, clearly it was all about control, and they got some sort of a thrill from meeting out control and... Oh, so to me, it would border on sadistic. They clearly had no job satisfaction to start with. They must, mm-hmm, have hated their job. They must have hated coming in the morning and leaving that evening. So why would they stay in a job where they would despise these people? So to me, it would border on a little bit of sadistic. Yeah, that's the only way I could explain it. Clearly they're mothers and grandmothers themselves, so they would know what a human being needs, and especially somebody, okay, like those women with special needs. I can't understand it. I can't fathom it. But I just wanted to reassure people that all experiences are not like that. Mine could not have been more opposite. I loved those people.
Okay, well, Anna is on the line, Susan. Anna is another whistleblower. Even though the Aisling and Anna and Alice earlier on were saying we don't see ourselves as whistleblowers. It was our duty of care. That's what we did by reporting it to management, but we didn't get anywhere. Anna, what was your experience?
Hi, Joe. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Yeah, I'm a registered nurse of the intellectual disabilities sector, mm-hmm, and I was a senior nurse manager and worked in a residential centre. And, mm-hmm, I brought forward concerns to my managers who completely ignored what I was saying. I went to the chairman of the company, it was the board of management there.
Okay.
I went to them with my concerns and it was sent back to my CEO again. I then went to the HSE. I went to an umbrella group that the company was registered under for people with disabilities. And the person there, a representative for them, then spoke with my CEO. And I was referred to as trouble.
Which is the way people are dismissed, isn't it? They're
yeah.
Oh, she's trouble, yeah, or he's trouble.
Yeah, I... went out of work on sick leave, and when I went to return to work, I was told I couldn't go back to work.
And Anna, what did you witness that upset you so much?
Practices that were in place, and also conditions that clients were living in.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought long and hard before I went to the HSE with it, because I was on a good salary. It was my profession. I was dependent on my salary, basically, even though I was an advocate for the clients and I was their voice. I felt I had a duty to them to bring forward conditions I didn't think were appropriate. They just didn't meet up to living standards.
Okay, but your point is that you felt you weren't treated seriously, and your opinions were dismissed. And
I was ostracised by the senior management structure in the service.
Okay. Stay with us, Anna. Just need to take this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Anna, does last night's programme encourage you to proceed again or to reactivate?
I was horrified at last night's programme. I was looking at the staffing levels. They seem to be adequate, good staffing levels, and yet the service users, there was no motivation for them no programmes as such. But I just want to say, like, I'm no longer working in the service. I resigned on the grounds of ill health due to stress that this situation brought on me and my family, the effect that it had on the whole of my family. Okay. And I've actually moved to a different part of the country since.
Okay. Anna, thanks indeed. I'm over time, unfortunately. And as I say, struck today by the number of people who were whistleblowers and say that they didn't get very far up to quite recently. Between 30 and 100,000 are the figures we're hearing for Merrion Square and a number of sit-down protests in Nassau Street and O'Connor Bridge. Back tomorrow, 1:45, Emma Laffin producing, Derek Mooney is next.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.